all the people. First comes the great joy of being together with a whole bunch of people who are seeking their day in the sun. There's the excitement, the energy that comes from being surrounded by people who kind of mostly agree with. There's a kind of wide spectrum of folks. Then comes the anticipation, and then all of a sudden, there's some trepidation, and then some fear, and then panic, and stampede, and pain, and rage. I was standing there, and I heard very clearly the police say, "This is an illegal assembly. You are ordered to disperse." I would have happily dispersed. All by myself, I would have just dispersed in various directions, except for the fact that the police had surrounded us and had sealed off all of the exits. The helicopters were buzzing menacingly overhead, and it struck me that there were about two options. One was to try to rent a backhoe and dig out from underneath this surrounded space. The other was to try to jump up and grab the railing of one of the helicopters and be rescued deus ex machina. However, the helicopters were not a source of salvation. Rather, Diablo ex machina, the tear gas canisters started. People started running and screaming and choking and coughing. And then the police, seeing that the mob was out of control because they were running and screaming and choking and coughing, started basically to beat up people who were running and screaming and choking and coughing. I got out unscathed. I got out unscathed because I'm white, dressed well, and carrying an attaché case. Seemed to confuse them. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but they weren't after me then. This did not happen on May Day in MacArthur Park. This happened in Berkeley in the 60s. Same kinds of behaviors from crowds, same kinds of behaviors from police. Very appropriate, of course, that it was May Day. Very, and I'll get into why, and very appropriate that it was at MacArthur Park. And I will get into why that's also true. Surviving Berkeley in the 60s, I didn't major in riotology, but I think that I got a battlefield commission that's good at least for a master's, if not for a PhD, in how riots happen, both in terms of civilians and police and occasionally even National Guard. My experience has been, and it seems to be very similar to what happened in MacArthur Park, and no, I wasn't there. I was actually discussing a movie Tuesday night with our movie group. Normally, you get people together who are having a good time, and you get some people in the back who have probably either been drinking or have an agenda, or both, and they kind of work on each other. You didn't know you had an agenda until you started drinking. And then you have the people in the back with all of the anonymity and protection that being in the back offers starting to throw things. And so the poor patsies in the front end up getting pushed and hit. I'm going to give you a little preview of the end of this sermon, which is I'm not going to be beating up the police today. Although... karma would be karma. I think it's a leadership issue, and I'll get into that. Because what happens when people riot? What happens when there is a mob is that you lose, whether you are the demonstrator or the protester or you are the police, you lose a sense of yourself in whatever that task is that you're involved in. Protesters see the police as fascists, as pigs, as authority, and police often see protesters as the forces of the devil, of anarchy, or and whatever the bad guy is right now. Obviously, protesters are people who want to change the status quo 90% of the time. So they kind of agree on not seeing the full humanity in each other. And that becomes a really terrible thing, a very frightening thing. And I have been in a variety of marches and protests for open housing, for civil rights, anti-war in the 60s, all kinds. And I've seen all kinds of behavior. And it is seldom the case that you truly have a mob of angry people assembled. You usually have a spectrum of people, some of whom want trouble and want the adrenaline charge and blood on the streets, and they don't much care about the issue because a lot of them are motivated just for the excitement. It is an adrenaline charge. It is a form of ecstasy to be lost in the passion of a mob, whatever the cause. So on May Day, it's so ironic, May Day is a complicated event. First of all, the two ironies, at least, involve, it was at MacArthur Park. Now, MacArthur Park is named after MacArthur. MacArthur, who along with Patton, led the violent repression, the beating up, and ultimately the deaths of some of the veterans of World War I who had peacefully assembled in their Hoovervilles in order to ask the government to actually pay what the government had promised to pay them. And MacArthur was only following orders and sent his troops in to beat, bludgeon, and some died. It's just an astounding irony. The second irony is that it's May Day. And May Day is one of those really complex holidays, if not holy days. It is a workers' celebration. It is what a lot of people on the true left, not what the right wing calls the left in this country, which is not very much of a true left, but what the true left calls the real Labor Day. And I'll get to why that may be the case. And it celebrates, commemorates, reminds people of the Haymarket martyrs and some of the protests that were done in the 19th century for workers, for what became unions, and how goons all over this country and other countries, and this is not sour grapes because I write for the Fullerton Observer and the LA Daily News, but how the goons from the LA Times just beat people who wanted to form unions senselessly. Thank you. Just washed my mouth and can't do a thing with it. It is, May Day is a commemoration of workers' rights. And it's one of the great marching holidays. Now, the reason that all these things happen on May Day relates to the other part of May Day, which is an ancient celebration of summer. I know that summer doesn't officially get here, but other times and other peoples didn't celebrate the onset of winter and the onset of spring and summer when we do. They consider the solstice and the equinox to be mid-season celebrations. I've always wondered about winter beginning on the day that the sun starts to rise again. It's really a midwinter celebration for the solstice. May Day was considered really the beginning of summer, the time when across the Northern Hemisphere, even as far as England and Scotland, you could come outdoors. You could come outdoors and celebrate life and fertility. You could go on long walks with your loved one and linger for whatever purposes in the fields. You could march. One of the things that I learned about protests in Berkeley in the 60s is that don't call for a protest in the middle of football season. You won't get a crowd. And don't call for a protest when you can rely upon rain and cold. Because a lot of people are willing to die for their cause, but they're not willing to get wet. So, you know, this is just something that you should know about how human beings are motivated and how we actually act. May Day really, in a way, is that perfect religious holiday because it celebrates both creation and destruction. It is the creation and fertility and the maypole, and it is, in a sense, destruction because it is trying to shake the old social order. And people come together to take, as our hymn says, their place in the sun. Because clearly they have not found their place in the sun, in the Hispanic community, unless white people think that place in the sun means the right to be outside and pick crops. And that's not what the song means. Immigration is one of the toughest conversations that reasonable and unreasonable people ever have because it's not amenable to a simple bumper sticker answer. But most of us get caught with these bumper sticker answers. I get, of all of the op-ed things that I do for two newspapers, more hate mail about immigration from people who think that I'm on the wrong side of it, and people on both sides think that I'm on the wrong side of it, because being nuanced is punishable by passion. And there's just this tremendous animus. And some of it, a lot of it, is clearly racial. One of the good things that happened on May Day in that riot, which turned into a police riot, one of the great philosophical questions was answered. If a tree falls in the forest and there's no press to cover it, did it happen? And the answer is no, it didn't happen. But when the press falls in the forest, when they come after people that look like me, then you know that they're out of control. There's an old piece of wisdom that says never pick a fight with people that buy their ink by the barrel. And that is also true, as the press may diminish, it's also true of who have electronic broadband access and can get our pixels on the tube and on YouTube, and you can see what actually happens. Now, in the best of all possible worlds, nobody would get beat up at any kind of rally. In the best of all possible worlds, people at rallies would not have either agents provocateurs who from either side that wanted to start something, and nobody would throw rocks or bottles. Incidentally, throwing bottles is a generational thing. Most of the bottles were plastic, it still shouldn't throw them. But most people of a certain age have a sense of bottles being glass and a little more dangerous. In the best of all possible worlds, how you are treated by the police should not be related to your color, your ethnicity, your religion, your sexual orientation, your national origin, the languages that you speak. But we all know that that's not the case. That policemen and police women tend to treat different people differently, which is not right. We also know that typically what happens when something like this happens is there's an investigation, or two investigations, or three investigations. There's a plethora of investigations, and many innocent trees will be slaughtered to deal with the absolute obvious. And like Abu Ghraib, the people on the line will take the fall. And it may shock you to say, I don't think the people on the line should take the fall. I don't think that the cops, even the ones that fired 240 rubber-tipped bullets without ever making an arrest, it seems to me, if you're actually shooting people, that they must be doing something that makes it worth hauling them in for. But apparently it's easier to shoot than to do the paperwork. So that's true. That's another rule. It goes along with the good weather. Cops would rather not do the paperwork. And there is a lot of paperwork, so I don't hold them completely at fault for this. I'm just afraid that all of these investigations will point down the way investigations do. Mistakes were made passively. and somebody was hit with 10% too much force, and they didn't distinguish quite nicely enough. You know something? We shouldn't be inventing this wheel. And the reason that this is important and that I've devoted the sermon to it is that there are going to be, as whatever side and whatever nuances you may have in this room and with your family and with the larger society, the hot issues of a war, the increasing number of people, middle class, who are having their houses go into foreclosure, the problems that this we have as a society, the issues around immigration are, as the talking heads say, not going to go away anytime soon. And we can expect issues of protest to arise. And as human beings, we deserve better than being indiscriminately beaten, pushed, shot, and shoved. The police deserve better training, discipline, and leadership than they are getting across this country. It's not simply a Los Angeles problem or an Orange County problem. It is a problem that there are differences between people who are marching, people who are protesting, people who are involved in civil disobedience, people who are involved in rioting, and people who are involved in insurrection. And they call for different responses. What happened to me in Berkeley, when nobody was running through the streets screaming and looting and people were just indiscriminately gassed and beaten, what happened in MacArthur Park, when the vast majority of people were not throwing rocks and were trying to clear out, and women and women with children and grandmothers and broadcasters in suits and ties with cameras and microphones who clearly posed no clear and present danger to anyone were indiscriminately, maybe that's not true. I was going to say indiscriminately hit. The press may have not have been indiscriminately hit. They may have been hit on purpose. Not by orders, but on purpose because of the animus and the adversarial relationship that many police feel from the press because, let's face it, nobody likes being criticized. I'm not crazy about it myself, but there are few people here whom I would actually flog for criticizing me. Anyway, you're safe on this one, Danzig, okay? You're still on the side of the saints, but there needs to be training and policy that allows the police to have the discipline to respond appropriately. When we're dealing with difficult and nuanced situations around protest, it's really important to dial in the right degree of response. And I understand it's not a perfect science. And I understand it's difficult. And I understand that it's not easy if you're a police officer to stand there and have rocks and bottles being thrown at you. It's very counterintuitive not to get just the slightest bit annoyed. But that's what training's about. It may shock some of you that along with my peace protests, I also boxed in college. I was about as successful in both cases, by the way. I never met a left hook that could not find my nose. Okay? Let's put it that way. And finally just stopped setting it and just basically had to live with it. But one of the things that you learn in boxing is all of your instincts when somebody throws a fist at you are to close your eyes. That's not a good career move. See, if you close your eyes and people start punching you and you've chosen to box, you're going to get really, your eyes are going to stay closed for a really long time because you're going to be taking a nap on the canvas. And it is counterintuitive for police to not get mad and upset and to handle with equanimity the fact that it's only a few people and you don't get to lose control. You don't get to lose control. This is an issue that comes from the top. It's about training. What happened in MacArthur Park is that they called the wrong play from the wrong playbook. They called a response that seems to be dialed in almost perfectly for insurrection, for rioting in the streets that you're trying to protect a neighborhood, not for 50, 75 people in a crowd of several thousand who are drunk and throwing rocks and empty bottles. That's the other rule of rioting. You never throw a full beer bottle. I mean, that's just, you know, not ecologically sound. They didn't have the proper response, and that came from leadership. That came from whoever calls the play. It's very important that people talk about this stuff. Not so much in terms of the various issues. There's a wide spectrum of how we're going to feel and react in terms of issues of immigration, of how people feel about that. But there are a couple of things, or war for that matter, but there are a couple of things that just have to be clear. It's inappropriate to respond according to race, class, and you don't get to be treated brutally because somebody suspects you're either with the press or suspects that you are out somewhere in public with dark skin. That's not okay. And we need to care about how our public servants, and that's what police are, how they react appropriately to the circumstances. It's a difficult and complex society, but police are not social arbiters. They are there to try to keep or establish some sense of order and some sense of proportionality. And it's a hard thing to do. May Day has another meaning. Help! Comes from the French, m'aider. Come to my aid, I'm in trouble. Well, on this May Day, we were all in trouble, civilians and police and government, because at every level, people failed, not all people, not all police, not all demonstrators, not all press, not all politicians, but people failed to see and to respect the humanity in those whom they saw as being on the other side. Until at some level we can understand that we share this world, this society, these towns, these cities, together, that we have the same inherent worth and dignity, until we can model it and see it and affirm it in that other, we are part of a cycle. And the problem for Unitarian Universalists is that when we cry May Day, at whom is this prayer and this cri de coeur directed? It has to be directed at our inner selves and at each other. One of my favorite memories of the 60s, and no, I wasn't there at this moment, but the iconic photograph just spoke volumes, was at the demonstration at the Pentagon that was going to try to levitate the Pentagon. It worked about as well as my boxing career. But the young lady who took flowers and put it in the barrels of the guns, that was a gesture, but it was also a recognition, if you will, a moment of communion where there was at least an attempt to connect our humanity together and to acknowledge that all of us, of all classes and races and ethnicities and education levels, we share the same world, the same territory. However we got here, however we got here, when we are face to face with each other, we are face to face with human beings. May Day is a celebration of creation, of life, of nature, of warmth, the time that we come out of our caves, out of our shells, and walk into the sun. It would be a nice time if we could join hands as we walk together.